All right, so today we're going to deep dive into something pretty cool. Creating a garden that's a paradise for pollinators. But not just in the spring and summer. We're talking year-round pollinator haven.
Yeah, a lot of people think pollinators just disappear once it gets cold.
Right. It's like they forget about them after the flowers fade.
Exactly. But they're actually out there even in the depths of winter.
No way. Seriously. Like even when it's freezing.
Yep, even then. Take the owlet moth, for example. They actually shiver to stay warm enough to be active, even when it's near freezing.
Wow, that's hardcore. I guess nature really does find a way, huh?
It always does.
So, how do we create this year-round pollinator haven? Where do we even begin?
Well, the key is to think beyond those typical bursts of color we see in like May and June.
Okay, so not just relying on the usual suspects.
Right. We need to incorporate native plants that can offer support throughout the entire year, not just for a few weeks.
Native plants. Okay, I know they're important. But can you remind me why they're so crucial for pollinators?
Sure. It's all about that long history they have together.
Like they've been buddies for a long time.
Exactly. Native plants and insects have evolved side by side for millennia. They've formed these intricate relationships that benefit both.
So it's more than just providing a quick meal, it's about supporting their entire life cycle.
Exactly. For instance, many insects rely on very specific plants to lay their eggs and for their caterpillars to feed on. We call these host plants. And they're essential for those insects' survival.
So it's like providing a nursery as well as a restaurant.
You got it. And get this, some of these native plants we'll be talking about today can host a crazy number of different pollinator species.
Really? Like, how many are we talking?
Hundreds. We'll be diving into some of these superstar plants today.
Superstar plants. I like the sound of that. Okay, let's start with those winter warriors you mentioned. What's blooming in the dead of winter?
Well, believe it or not, you can actually have blooms in your garden even in January.
Seriously. What kind of plant is crazy enough to bloom in January?
Witch hazel.
Witch hazel. Isn't that like the stuff you put on cuts and scrapes?
That's right. It comes from a shrub with these amazing spidery flowers that pop out in the coldest months.
Wow.
Ugh.
I never knew that. So it's not just medicinal. It's a pollinator plant, too.
Yep. And guess what pollinates it?
Let me guess. Something tough enough to handle the cold. The owlet moth.
You got it.
So even those medicinal plants have a role to play in the ecosystem.
Yes, pretty cool.
What comes after those early bloomers? What happens as things start to warm up?
Well, then we move into the world of spring ephemerals.
Spring ephemerals. Now those are some pretty little things.
They are. Think Virginia bluebells, May apples, those kinds of plants.
Yeah, they pop up early, have a burst of beauty, and then they disappear.
Exactly. They come up, bloom quickly, and then fade as the trees start to leaf out and block the sunlight.
I love those spring ephemerals. But their show is so short. Does that mean they're not as valuable for pollinators?
Not at all. They're actually filling a crucial gap. Their early blooms provide a vital food source when resources are still scarce.
Oh, that makes sense. It's like that first coffee shop opening in the morning, essential for those early risers.
Exactly. So even a short bloom time can be hugely beneficial if it's timed, right?
I'm starting to see how every plant has its role to play. So, what else is happening in those early months? Are there any other key players we should know about?
Absolutely. Don't underestimate the power of violets, especially bird's foot violet.
Violets. Okay.
Yes.
What's so special about them?
Well, this little plant is the only host plant for the entire greater fritillary butterfly group.
Wow. Seriously, the entire group.
Yep. And that includes the Arkansas State butterfly.
So, if you want to see those beauties fluttering around,
Yeah.
you need bird's foot violet in your garden.
You got it. One seemingly simple plant can be the key to an entire butterfly group's survival.
That's pretty amazing. Talk about ecological power. Are there any trees that are good for those early pollinators?
Definitely. Service berry is an amazing choice.
Service berry. Okay,
Okay.
tell me more.
It blooms early, attracting a variety of pollinators. And the best part is its berries are edible for us humans, too.
Ooh, so it's a win-win. Good for pollinators and good for us.
And it has gorgeous foliage that turns a brilliant red in the fall, so it's a multi-season star.
Okay, so it's not just a pollinator superstar, it's a garden superstar, period. I'm sold. Any other trees that come to mind?
Redbud is another fantastic choice.
Redbud. Those have those beautiful pink blooms.
Exactly. They're a magnet for native bees. And you can even eat the flowers.
Really? Edible flowers. That's
Yeah.
cool. What do they taste like?
They have a slightly sweet pea-like flavor. They add a lovely touch to salads.
Okay, so we're talking edible landscaping here. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned those superstar plants. I'm dying to know more about those. What makes them so special?
Well, our first superstar is actually a tree as well, the Prunus mexicana.
Prunus mexicana?
Yeah.
That's a mouthful. What is it exactly?
It's a type of cherry tree. And get this, it can support a mind-blowing 285 different species of butterflies and moths.
285, that's incredible. But what exactly makes these plants superstars? Is it just the sheer number of insects they attract?
It's a combination of things. But diversity is definitely key. Superstar plants support a wide array of insects, especially those specialist species that rely on just a few specific plants to complete their life cycle.
Oh, so they're like the VIPs of the plant world, supporting all the picky eaters.
Exactly. Think of them as the anchor stores of the pollinator world, attracting a bustling crowd of diverse shoppers.
Okay, I'm getting it. If we want to make a real impact, planting these superstars is the way to go.
You got it. Now that we've covered those early bloomers, let's move on to the mid-season marvels. May to July is when things really start to heat up in the garden.
Mid-season marvels. Bring it on. I'm already picturing those vibrant blooms. Mid-season marvels.
Okay.
I'm ready. What are some of the standouts?
Well, this time of year is just bursting with color. But I want to talk about a plant that might surprise you. Fragrant sumac.
Sumac. Isn't that kind of like weedy?
It can be a little rambunctious. That's what? True. But it's also a powerhouse for pollinators. And bonus points, deer tend to avoid it because of its strong aroma.
So, a win for the pollinators and a win for gardeners who are always fighting off deer.
Yeah.
I like that. Any other unexpected heroes in the mid-season garden?
Let's talk about the Grallo sumac. This is a great example of how not all cultivars are created equal when it comes to supporting pollinators.
Hold on. Cultivars, those are like the plants that are bred for specific traits? Right,
yeah.
Like those vibrant colors,
yeah.
Or extra large blooms.
Exactly. And while some cultivars can still be beneficial for pollinators, recent research has shown that some of them, especially those with altered leaf color, can actually be harmful to insects.
Harmful? How so?
Well, the Grallo sumac, for example, has these beautiful burgundy leaves, but that change in pigmentation can actually prevent insects from using it as a host plant.
So even though it looks pretty,
It's
not actually providing the same level of support as the native species.
That's the unfortunate truth. And it's something to be really mindful of when you're choosing plants for your garden. Sometimes those flashy cultivars come at a cost to the ecosystem.
That's a really good point. So native species over cultivars whenever possible.
Got it. What are some other mid-season marvels that we should be on the lookout for?
Rose vervain is a fantastic one. It's a ground cover that blooms for ages.
Rose vervain. Okay, I've heard of that one. What's so special about it?
It's tough, adaptable, can handle a variety of conditions.
Sure.
And if you cut it back in the summer, you'll get a whole second flush of blooms.
Oh. So a little bit of strategic pruning can really extend the benefit for pollinators.
Absolutely.
What other plants should we be adding to our list?
Sandflox is a beautiful native alternative to the commonly used creeping phlox.
So even when we're choosing something as simple as a ground cover, it's important to think about those native alternatives.
You got it. Every plant choice matters.
It really does. As we move into the later months, I imagine those resources become even more precious for pollinators. What should we be planting for that late season support? You're absolutely right. Those late bloomers are crucial for pollinators who are getting ready for winter or migrating south. Goldenrod and asters are two absolute must-haves for the fall garden.
I love those bright pops of color in the fall. But I have to admit, I've always been a little hesitant about goldenrod. Doesn't it cause allergies?
That's a common misconception. Goldenrod often gets blamed for allergies because it blooms around the same time as ragweed, which is the real culprit.
Oh, so goldenrod is off the hook.
Totally. It's actually got heavy pollen that's spread by insects, not by the wind, so it's very unlikely to trigger allergies.
Well, it's good news. So are all goldenrod varieties good to go?
Not all of them. Some can be a bit aggressive in the garden.
Okay, I was afraid of that.
But there are plenty of well-behaved options, like cliff goldenrod, which has a tidy shrub-like habit, and Solidago speciosa, which has these gorgeous showy blooms that last well into the fall.
Okay, I'm taking notes here. Goldenrod is back on the list. What about asters? Any favorites there?
Oh, yes. Asters are wonderful. They come in all these beautiful colors, whites, purples, pinks, you name it. And they provide that essential late season nectar when many other plants are winding down.
I do love asters. But they can get quite big and bushy, can't they?
They can. But there's a technique you can use to manage their size and even increase their bloom power. It's called the spring haircut.
A spring haircut. Now you've got my attention. Tell me more.
It's actually pretty simple. For fall blooming perennials like Boltonia and asters, you can cut back the foliage by about half in the spring. This encourages them to grow more compact and produce even more blooms. It's like giving them a little energy boost for the season ahead.
So a little tough love in the spring leads to more beauty in the fall.
I like it. Any dramatic spring haircut stories you can share?
I do, actually. I remember when I was working at the botanical garden, we had this aster that was really struggling. It had a fungal infection and was starting to decline.
Oh, no.
So we decided to give it the most extreme spring haircut ever. We chopped it down to just 1 inch tall. Whoa, talk about a buzz cut. Were you worried you'd killed it?
We were. We thought we might have. But to our amazement, it bounced back with more vigor than ever. It bloomed like crazy. Absolutely stunning.
That's incredible. So even if a plant is looking a little rough,
yeah,
a spring haircut might be just what it needs.
It's definitely worth a try. And speaking of comebacks, remember that witch hazel we talked about earlier? There's actually a variety that blooms even before Christmas.
Seriously, blooms in December. That's mind-blowing.
It really is. It's so magical to see those delicate blooms when everything else is dormant. And with a little pruning, it can be shaped into a beautiful specimen that would look right at home in even the most manicured landscape.
So even in the depths of winter, we can have a pollinator-friendly garden. I'm loving this.
Exactly. It's all about thinking beyond those peak blooming periods and providing support throughout the entire year. Now, as we move into those late summer months, you might start to see a shift in the types of pollinators that visit your garden.
A shift in pollinators.
Okay.
What do you mean by that?
Well, as we head into like August and September, you might notice fewer butterflies and more bees and wasps, even flies buzzing around.
Really? Flies? I guess I tend to focus on those showy butterflies, but it makes sense that there's a whole other crew working behind the scenes. What kind of plants attract those less glamorous pollinators?
One that comes to mind is buttonbush. It's often found growing near water and has these really unique spherical flower clusters. They're always buzzing with activity.
Or buttonbush. I think I've seen that.
Yeah.
But it can get pretty big and wild looking.
Right.
Not exactly what you picture in like a formal garden.
That's true. But remember, even native plants can be pruned and shaped with a little care. You can keep buttonbush tidy and compact, and it blooms on new wood. So you can even prune it back hard in the winter without losing those flowers.
So it's adaptable and low maintenance. That works for me. What other plants should I be thinking about for those late summer pollinators?
Well, there's the classic black-eyed Susan Rudbeckia fulgida.
Black-eyed Susan, no, that's one I know. Those are tough plants.
They are. It's a true workhorse in the garden, attracts a wide variety of pollinators, and blooms for weeks on end. Just make sure you get the native species, not the cultivar Oldster.
Right, right. We talked about that. Cultivars, not always the best choice.
Exactly. The native black-eyed Susan is the way to go.
Noted.
Yeah.
Are there any other must-haves you would recommend?
Culver's root is a cool one. It's tall, stately, with these delicate white flowers that are especially attractive to small native bees.
Culver's root. Okay. I'll have to look that one up. What else?
And, oh, we can't forget about lobelias. We have two native species, red lobelia, which is a hummingbird magnet with those fiery red blooms.
Yeah.
And then there's blue lobelia, which is a favorite of bees. It's amazing how two plants from the same family can attract such different pollinators just based on their color.
That is pretty cool. It's like they each have their own target audience.
Mm-hmm.
It really shows how important it is to plant a variety of colors to cater to everyone.
Exactly. And both of those lobelias can handle some shade, so they're great options for those less sunny spots in your garden.
Okay. My list is getting long.
Mm.
What about sunflowers? I feel like those would be a hit with pollinators.
You're absolutely right. The woodland sunflower is another one that can take some shade. And all sunflowers in general are just superstars for supporting pollinator.
Another superstar.
Mm.
I'm sensing a theme here. It seems like those plants that support the widest range of pollinators are really the key.
You got it. When it comes to perennials, sunflowers, goldenrod, and asters are the top three for supporting Lepidoptera. That's the order that includes butterflies and moths.
Wow, that's good to know. It's like having a cheat sheet for creating a pollinator paradise.
And if you want to create a really buzzing hub of activity, try planting some slender mountain mint.
Slender mountain mint. Okay, that sounds promising.
It attracts a huge variety of pollinators.
Yeah.
And has this lovely, delicate fragrance. Just be aware that it is a mint, so it can spread.
Right. The mint family, always trying to take over.
But if you have a spot where you can let it roam a bit, it's a fantastic choice.
I can just picture it. A whole patch of slender mountain mint humming with bees and butterflies. That's the dream.
It really is. And remember, every plant we've talked about today, it's not just about creating a pretty garden. It's about creating habitat. supporting this whole web of life that goes way beyond our backyards.
That's a really important point. It's not just about aesthetics. It's about playing our part in the ecosystem.
Exactly. So let's get out there, get planting, and create a world where pollinators can thrive.
Well, I am definitely feeling inspired to get out there and start planting. Thanks so much for sharing all of your amazing knowledge. I've learned so much from this deep dive.
It's been my pleasure. Happy gardening.
And to all our listeners, remember, even small actions can make a big difference. Keep those curiosity engines running, and we'll see you on our next deep dive.